This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. When electronic communication came on the scene, it enabled us to communicate with each other without speaking face-to-face. It began with the telegram, moved to the telephone, and now in the digital age, email, text messaging, and myriad other forms allow us to communicate without looking at each other. We know that emails altered the way we write. We became much less formal, and our written communication became shorter. Texting has made those spurts of communication even more terse and removed vocal inflections, which sometimes cause confusion. Words can mean different things depending on inflection and even facial expression. In the absence of those things, it is easy to miscommunicate. In 2011, Apple introduced emojis in a software update, and they quickly spread to other platforms. No longer limited to just colons, parentheses, and other typographic symbols, we now have artistic pictures at our disposal with which to express ourselves. But some fear emojis are altering the language, dumbing it down. Are they? Or are we creating a new form of expression? Listen to this emoji-filled conversation and decide for yourself.
My dad's gonna kill me.
Sorry, blushing face, thumbs up.
BTW, lollipop, snowman, toilet, mailbox, ghost.
Apple, woman's shoe, alarm clock, acorn.
So true.
Say what? Okay, well, that's from a Netflix show called Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, in which a teenager is asking a friend to clean up her house after a party. Now, that may sound like an exaggeration, but it may not be. And here to talk about this new phenomenon are three language experts. Josephine Koster is professor of English and director of English graduate studies at Winthrop University. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Mike.
Dr. John MacArthur is associate professor of communication and director of graduate programs at the Knight School of Communication at Queen's University of Charlotte. And the Queen's website, by the way, refers to him as their social media guru. Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. They are both in our Spirit Square studio, and joining us by phone is Tyler Sneblin, whose name is not spelled at all the way it sounds. Tyler Sneblin is the founder and chief analyst at Itabon. That's a natural language processing firm. He's also involved in artificial intelligence and lots of other things that we'll get into over the course of the next hour. Thank you for being with us so early in the morning in San Francisco.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So does it strike you as odd or ironic that a few years ago, I think 2015, last year, the Oxford English Dictionary selected an emoji as the 2015 word of the year? Because by definition, an emoji is not a word. I don't know who to begin with on that question. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I think it's not that it's surprising because emojis are a way of representing words. And, I mean, what's the difference between representing an emoji as the word of the year and something that's written in cursive or something that's printed in Gothic letters?
Because it's not a word.
Well,
are we going to have emojis in dictionaries now?
We may have dictionaries of emoji. I mean, they're characters. They represent different linguistic units.
Well, you bring up an interesting point because I rarely use emojis because I just think they're silly. But we'll talk about that too because I'm a dinosaur waiting to die here. But I got on my phone yesterday and in my texting program and just looked through the emojis available to me at my fingertips, and I thought, now how would a person use all of these? And we'll talk about whether there are rules to all that, because the choices number in the hundreds, nearing thousand at least. So for those people who do not know what we're talking about, and blessedly true, that is, how would you describe an emoji? Go ahead. You take it, Dr. John.
An emoji is a visual representation of a nonverbal cue. So when we think about an emoji, we're thinking about an image that suggests a feeling or suggests an idea that someone wants to express visually.
So are we gravitating toward this because it's easier to communicate on our portable devices with our thumbs on these clumsy screens? So therefore it's painfully difficult to type, or because we have simply become so nonverbal that a picture will do?
I think when we think about communication, you know, most people would agree that 70 to 90% of the way that we communicate is nonverbal. So when we're writing and when we're using a text-based language conversation, we are communicating without the tone, the inflection, the gesture that we normally experience in everyday life. And emojis let us try to approximate that in a text-based situation.
So you don't see it as diminishing language. It's augmenting communication.
I think it's been developed as a way for a language skills. When we're texting, it's so hard to put in feelings. It's so hard to put in nuance. And then you add an emoji, and then that tells the person who's receiving your text something about the feelings or the emotions you were trying to convey. They're adding one in June that's it's another one of the face emojis, and it's about the face about to vomit. I want that for like every political tweet I use because it's good. That's something we need.
Don't we already have that one? Oh, that you said about to vomit. They're
about to vomit, yes.
We have one where they already are, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I can't believe we're talking about this. Tyler, you're the founder and chief analyst for a company called Itabon, and you analyze and interpret linguistic data. So how does what you do fit into this conversation about emojis?
Sure. Well, organizations tend to need to understand what people are saying to and about them. And as people are saying, these are great for telling us extra features of is somebody happy or are they sad? That's a lot of how emoji are used. The most popular ones tend to be the facial expressions and the heart. So they're really giving you this sort of decoder key to, if I just had these words written, you know, in just text, I wouldn't necessarily know what was the facial expression or what's the vocal intonation. And so these sort of unlock the meaning in many cases for a statement that could otherwise sound a little monotone or a little plain or even mean. You can lighten it up by putting a smile at the end.
And even have the exact opposite meaning of what you intended because they don't hear your inflection or they don't you don't realize when you're writing how terse you might sound without inflection or a smile on your face.
Right. And I mean, that's absolutely right.
You have a PhD in linguistics, and you say that we are witnessing the birth of a new language here. Why?
I would not say that. No.
I believe that. Well, I don't know where that came from, but that's what I was told.
That was the title of a Wired piece that I was featured in. But and that the piece got it most of everything right, but the title is not right. There's you wouldn't want to call this a language just because most of the time that people are using emoji, they're really using one or two in a row. And if any of us only spoke in sentences of one or two words, I think you'd say, well, do they really know English? That doesn't seem to be the case. And so just the fact that these are not being really very often compiled into lots of different symbols appearing between, you know, apart from each other, that's kind of a restriction on being a language. And when people do use lots of emoji in a string, they're usually the same emoji repeated or all the different heart colors repeated.
And you also did your doctoral dissertation, I believe, or your thesis on emoticons. Emoticons are different from emojis in that they are using typographical symbols. It's like parenthesis, dash, not the parenthesis, the colon, dash, end parenthesis for a smiley face. How do you write a doctoral thesis on emoticons?
Yeah.
What was the thesis?
Sure, that was one of the three parts of my dissertation because I was interested in how people express emotion and language and sort of the use and structure of emoticons. So how are they actually deployed and what do they mean and what are the sort of axes of meaning, right? And so if you look at how emoticons get used, they're really a lot about politeness, and this is carrying over into emoji as well. So you get this politeness thing of like, oh, this is just a nice way to be friendly. I can make a thing softer by putting an emoticon or an emoji at the end of it. They're used for flirting. They're used for teasing, right? So that if I stick my tongue out at the end of an emoticon or an emoji, you can sort of say I'm being playful in this situation. And so these sorts of axes of meaning are something that emoticons and emoji can sort of push into the text that otherwise would be kind of flat.
So are emojis replacing emoticons? I mean, to me, emoticons are kind of like drawing a stick figure on a piece of paper, whereas an emoji is having Picasso come in or Michelangelo come in and paint a smiling face as opposed to you doing it with parentheses. Are they replacing emoticons?
There is some evidence in some of the areas, like I think Facebook has this data that they are replacing. In other data, for example, in many people's text messages, they still are using both, right? And so part of the thing with the faces is that the faces are the most used, but they're these, you know, sort of yellow faces that are perfectly round. And sometimes people look at that and they say, that is not me. I do not have a perfectly round face. I don't want to look like that. And so in that way, punctuation, right, so using the colon and the parenthesis, which definitely does not look like you, gives you this sort of more abstract version of, well, at least I'm not a spherical, you know, head. And so you still get both of them being used, but in different communities, you do see some replacing them.
We're going to talk.
We have a lot more easy possibilities.
We're going to talk about where these things came from and why in a little while. But I remember in the 1970s, the sudden appearance of the slogan "Have a happy day," and along
have
with that,
"Have a nice day."
Well, maybe in your part of the world, but in our part of the world, it was "Have a happy day," and there was a big yellow smiley face, which looks very much like some of these emojis. Is that where they got the idea, or is this, because I know these emojis come from Japan originally.
They started in Japan in the 90s, and a lot of American pop culture is iconic over there, so it probably was borrowed over at some point or another. That smiley face button, of course, shows up in things like graphic novels.
Yeah.
In a very twisted way, it's a very big part of Watchmen, for example. So it's quite possible that it came out of that kind of a pop culture stream.
As a matter of fact, we were talking about "Have a Happy Day." There was a whole jingle package recorded for KNBR in San Francisco that ended with that phrase on every jingle. That was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. How ubiquitous are emojis? How many people are using them on a regular basis? Do we know, John MacArthur?
I don't know, but I think that most people do. And I think that the issue with emojis is that they are platform-based. So if you have access to the platform that has an emoji keyboard, like your mobile phone does, then you can use the emojis that are associated with that platform. I'm teaching some courses online in our graduate program, and our online sharing software doesn't have emojis built in. So people are constantly writing "insert sad face emoji here" because they don't have access to it inside the platform. So I think, you know, the platform that you're using makes a big difference in the type, the style, and the concept of emoji that you might be able to use on a daily basis.
One of our producers sent me a web page you can go to, and you can see in real time the emojis that are being used on Twitter. I looked at it yesterday until I was about to go blind with the flashing lights, because it's happening in real time worldwide instantly, and there's just too much to keep track of. But what are the most popular emojis? Do we know?
Laughing until you cry usually is running number one on
so that's
something
a
like
big yellow smiley face with
the tears running down both sides. Yeah, mm-hmm. Emoji tracker. I went looking on that the other day, and I was really surprised. Pile of poo is down much further than I thought it would be, because that's the one I seem to see in a lot of messages.
You brought it up. I wasn't going to talk about that. You brought it up, so we're going to talk about that pile of poo. Evidently, Apple has taken one direction, Google has taken another direction, and I think Twitter has taken yet a third direction on exactly what a pile of poo should look like and what it should say.
I know, and I find it very, very distracting that they have little eyes looking at you, frankly.
Well, one has a smile on its face, so another one does not. It depends on which company you're dealing with. And that opens a whole other aspect of emojis. There's so many choices, and what you have at your disposal may not be what the recipient gets on their end. If you're transmitting from an Android phone to an Apple phone, it's going to be different. So how do we know what to use? We'll talk about that and more about emojis when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Duke Energy, committed to providing safe energy designed to protect people, the environment, and communities. And Bojangles, featuring the roasted chicken bites combo, marinated boneless chicken made from scratch biscuit, a fixin' and a drink. Available all day at area Bojangles. Well, you've heard about the incredibly long lines winding their way through security checkpoints at airports, and summer travel is about to begin. What does that portend? Epic wait times may get even longer. There are a variety of forces at work here, and with Douglas International already being the fifth busiest airport in the country and one in the midst of a major expansion, you might be wondering, how this might affect you this summer. Well, we're going to hear from somebody from the TSA and the Deputy Assistant Aviation Director of the airport about this tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Transportation Security Administration is under fire for long, slow airport screening lines and allegations of mismanagement. The latest on airport security at home, the shakeup at the TSA, and the investigation into the latest Egypt Air crash.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the use of emojis, the growing use of emojis. These are little artistic symbols that have cropped up on your smartphones and other platforms to enhance your conversations and text messages and tweets and things like that. In our studio here at Spirit Square is Josephine Koster, Professor of English and Director of English Graduate Studies at Winthrop University. Dr. John MacArthur is also with us, Associate Professor of Communication and the Director of the Graduate Program at the Knight School of Communication at Queen's University of Charlotte. And joining us by phone from San Francisco is Tyler Sneblin, who's the Founder and Chief Analyst for Itabon and works with emojis and other things and emoticons and you go on and on and on about all this. Let's go back and talk about the popular emojis. Are they the same from country to country? Or do we find that people in different countries or even people of different generations gravitate toward different emoji symbols in their conversations?
Nonverbal expression, the way that we communicate nonverbally in our use of space, our use of time, the way that we do gesture, the way that we use tone, body language, these things are all culturally bound. And so it makes sense that a nonverbal emoji would also be culturally bound, especially if it occurs to me the hand signals would be very differently read in a variety of cultures.
Yes, because if you go to London and you're too far to talk to the hostess in a restaurant, and you say a table for two, that means a very different thing when you put up two fingers in England than it does here. I found that out the hard way.
Oh, dear.
Yes. So.
The thumbs up, single fingers in different formations,
that's
they all
right.
make a difference.
Okay.
I know Tyler's research has done a lot about that because Tyler's worked a lot on sort of the emerging of syntax in emoji. But there was also a study done in the UK last year that said that, I mean, we're almost – the Canadians for some reason use pile of poo. Australians use emojis about drinking. The French use a lot of the heart emojis. And people in the Arabic world use a lot of roses and flowers, which are come out of Persian culture.
Well, those French people are very romantic. That's why they use the hearts. Tyler, is this a throwback to cuneiform or hieroglyphics or even cave drawings? I mean, that's how we started communicating, with pictures.
Well, a lot of the early writing systems were really for much more boring things like accounting or ownership. And then they evolved to edicts. And it takes pretty long in to have a literacy before you get to things like poetry or kind of informal communication. So in that way, these really did definitely start as a kind of adding some fun, right? When it was invented in Japan, it was really meant to be a differentiator. And all they had was 12 by 12 squares of pixels they could play with. So there, if you go back and look at the original emoji, the very first one, you can think of them showing up on your pager, and they would be quite strange looking to us now, whereas we can render things much more realistically now, or if not realistically, thoroughly. You also get these differences, right, that are partly about what's happening in a culture or in an area, right? So you do get more beachy kinds of emoji used by people who are in Hawaii or Florida, right? So there are palm trees, those sorts of things happen more in those places than, for example, in Siberia. So you get these things of people are referring to things, even though most of the time they're really just giving their emotions with the faces or the heart.
And I read yesterday that these emojis are killing off NetSpeak. Things like LOL and OMG are going by the wayside because emojis are taking over. Does that mean that emojis themselves could be a passing fad, only to be replaced by something else down the road that we haven't even thought of yet?
I remember when Twitter was launched, people were hungry for a sarcasm mark, something that would indicate I'm being sarcastic here on Twitter, because most of us are pretty bad writers. And when we start writing, we don't really communicate exactly what we mean. We communicate what we what we think we want to say, but it's not necessarily received in the same way. So emojis give you that instant pulse of emotion that just add to the conversation in the same way that the LOL or the OMG might have in previous versions.
You have been looking into the history, if I'm not mistaken, of this, Dr. MacArthur, and of how this phenomenon came into being and how usage has spread over time. What have you discovered?
Well, I just think that my interest is in how we communicate nonverbally. So over time, we adopt all different sorts of things to try to get our emotions across. And I think digital technologies provide an opportunity for us to try to figure out how do we create closeness with other people? How do we create the kinds of conversations that we might have in a room or on the phone when we're communicating at a very vast distance? And so anything that we can do in a digital setting to put our picture out there, to give an avatar, to use some kind of emotional mark that shows that we have some personality when we're communicating in a digital setting, those things are very heavily adopted and quickly.
Is this cross-generational? I mean, I know millennials use they're the world-leading experts on all of this, but is it cross-generational?
Oh, I think so. You see a lot. I saw a study. I was looking at some things last week that said that mothers and grandmothers tend to use the airplane one and the home one, like, you know, when are you coming home? But it might also be one of those things like slang, whereas older generations pick up what the younger ones are using, it makes it go out of fashion.
So for people who don't use these, who maybe don't have a smart, they still have a flip phone, your example that you just gave, when are you coming home?
Okay.
Would you say in your little text, when are you coming, picture of house, or would you say, when are you coming home, picture of house?
I've seen both. I think when people who are not very good with emojis start adopting, they start using them sort of as substitutes, as words in the sentences, rather than usually what you'll see rapid users use is either a string of emojis or they'll type out their sentence and then put the emojis on the end.
The example that we played, Tyler, at the very beginning of the program from that Netflix television program, I'm assuming that you heard it in San Francisco when we played it. Was that an exaggeration? I mean, obviously they're making fun, but could you actually put together an understandable sentence that communicated to your friend, as this example alleges to do, that I've had a party at my house that my father doesn't know about. The place is a wreck. Come help me clean it up. Could you do that with emojis and no words?
I mean, I think if you have a lot of shared understanding with friends, you could maybe do it, but it's a pretty far stretch, right? Because it's you're going to be communicating a lot of fun and style, but actually in terms of getting a message across, probably typing out the words is going to be more effective in getting the crew to come and help you, right? If you're, in fact, using emoji, you're making it more lightweight in a way than a sort of a desperate plea for help, right? So that there are times when emoticons and emojis really don't tend to be used, right? If you're truly full of rage or you're deeply sad or somebody has really lost somebody that's very meaningful to them, for most communities of people, it would be weird to use emoji in those situations.
So there are rules then, aren't there?
They're conventions at the very least.
Okay. Apple and Google, because this all started in Japan, realized very quickly that they needed to jump on the bandwagon and adopt these emojis because the Asian cell phone market is enormous. It's huge, to quote Donald Trump. Japanese written language is based on symbols. I mean, they're pictures of, I don't know whether you call them pictures, but they are not necessarily words. They indicate certain things. Is that why emojis caught on so quickly over there? It's part of their DNA.
I think it is. Go ahead, Tyler.
Well, my favorite thing about Japanese is that it doesn't just have the kanji or the symbols that you're talking about, but they also have two other alphabets that are phonetic alphabet.
Okay.
One is for sort of standard Japanese things, so it's a syllabary. So each letter is really a combination of a consonant and a vowel, rather than in English where you have the different sounds broken up. And then there's another one that's used for sort of onomatopoeic things and foreign words. And so there are three writing systems. And so one of my favorite things is the fact that the place that already has lots of writing systems, three of them, comes up with another one in the sense of emoji. It's in some ways utterly unnecessary and perfectly suitable for a country that already has three writing systems to develop emoji.
On my texting app, I went through yesterday because I don't ever use these things. I just wanted to, because I've read that there were 750 some emojis available to most people, and more are on the way.
Another 72 will be released in June, yeah.
Okay, and I looked through them, and I have selections of, good Lord, I don't even know how many smiley faces and hand gestures of men and women, and then objects like cell phones and umbrellas and shoes, sunglasses, various pictures of animals, fruits and vegetables, sports activities, vehicles. Let's see here. Things that, like, even a video cassette. I don't know who would ever put a video cassette because no one has them anymore. Flags, etc. How? There are so many of them. It just seems to be a nuisance. How would you even think to use one? You'd spend 20 minutes looking for the right one.
Here's the funny thing. Right after Apple released their emoticon display, Sashir Zameda on Saturday Night Live critiqued it because it didn't offer any black characters. So she was asking, what face do I use? And she said she would select the black moon face because that was the one that she felt looked most like her. And I think emojis have this ability to connect to us. But one of the issues that we have is that we are constrained by the design of those symbols. So when Apple designs them or Google designs them or whoever's designing these symbols, the people who are using them are constrained by that. And that's something we're not used to in visual storytelling. If we're telling a story visually, then we're allowed to use whatever artistic influence we would like to draw out a character or a phrase or an image that makes sense to us. With emoji, we really are constrained by the characters that are there.
Yeah, and there's a backlash right now about the sexism of emojis. The way that women are represented in emojis are usually as pregnant women or mothers or the two dancing Playboy bunnies or I'm doing my nails. And pretty much that's how you see women, and they're largely Caucasian. And Google actually has a campaign. They're trying to convince the Unicode Commission, who puts in the new emojis, to put in women who are scientists, who are nurses, who are things like that, career women, essentially, just like they're, you know, we can add the cowboy. Why can't we add, you know, the nurse or something like that, something that would represent, you know, women as a little less than two dancing bunnies.
So we have all these different choices. Does this indicate, and more on the way, does this indicate, for lack of a better term, an expanding vocabulary of choices? Is it vocabulary that we're looking at here? A new vocabulary?
I think it's new letters, new characters. You know, language occurs over time. Language is built by a culture, and emojis are one of those things that are in the process of being built. Mm-hmm. And I think what we see is you'll see these platforms of emojis. The ones that are used most frequently will remain, and the ones that people never use might fade off, and we'll add different ones that make more sense to more people. The thing about a visual representation, though, is it has to mean something similar to you and me for us to be able to communicate it as sender and receiver. And if it doesn't share some similarity between you and me, then it doesn't make sense for me to use it.
You're working with artificial intelligence, Tyler, and you're working on – you just told us before we started the program that you're working on – poetry with artificial intelligence, letting them create poetry. So we have this expanding vocabulary, all these hundreds of choices of emoticons. And at first that kind of stymied me when I thought about it. Well, how would you ever bother? Why would you bother with it? How would you ever find the right one? But in English, we have, I don't even know how many words, tens of thousands of words, and there's just the right word for the right situation. Is this the same thing?
Well, I mean, I think that's an interesting thing, right? So Shakespeare gives us eyeball as well as a whole bunch of other words that we now have in very common use. People invent these, invent words and terms all the time. And so, you know, I think part of the expansion of emoji is partly about letting people give a sense of their own personal style. So most of the time they're going to be being friendly and hearty and kissing and things like that. But sometimes they're a penguin, or sometimes they're, a tongue with a ghost with a tongue sticking out. I think that the big story, what's interesting to me that Oxford chose the tears of joy emoji as their word of the year, is the real story last year was one of, and the whole story of emoji is one of diversity, I believe, right? So last year there became an ability to sort of select skin tones for a lot of the different emoji, and there were a lot more religious symbols from a lot of different faiths added in as well. And I think that that's actually also what drove emoji to be on your smartphone and mine, is because the Unicode Consortium that sort of says, hey, we need to have symbols that will be true on all devices all over the world, they said, yes, let's take on emoji and have a standard by which everyone can see these things. What you were saying earlier is true, though. Every platform gets to decide how do you design and how do you draw these different symbols, but they're all at least sort of saying, this is the letter A, and maybe it's in Times New Roman, or maybe it's in Comic Sans, but this is going to be roughly the letter A.
So
this is roughly a Tears of Joy.
So I have an Android, and if I texted John your Apple phone with a particular emoji, like I have a smiley face with little pink cheeks on it, and I did text this to somebody, and they didn't get the pink cheeks because they had an Apple phone.
They didn't know you were blushing, Mike.
So is that the comparison that it's I texted them in New Times Roman and they got it in Arial?
Yeah,
essentially,
it's a font difference. It's a difference of font, sure.
Font and recognition too. I mean, I think we've all gotten the text where you get the little rectangles in there because your program can't recognize
right.
what the pictures are. And you know, and I end up texting back, "I got box, box, box." I'm hoping you're okay.
Let me share with you what some people have been saying as we have been listening. Pastor Naomi in Matthews writes, "I'm of the opinion that when used in creative ways, emojis can be a great way to stimulate conversation and make very specific points. I gave my confirmation students the task of rewriting the Ten Commandments Reformed with emojis. It led to some great conversation and gave them a great way to rethink the Ten Commandments." Somebody has done Moby Dick in emojis. Is that correct?
That's correct. It was done actually as a crowdsourced project.
The first sentence in Moby Dick is, "Call me Ishmael." In emoji speak, I understand, it is the picture of a telephone followed by the picture of a man, a picture of a sailboat, a picture of a whale, and a hand making the OK sign. How is that Ishmael?
Well, there's always that statement in literary things about, well, this just happens to be my interpretation. But for me, that would be a far, far thing away. But I can see what Tyler's doing with, say, something like imagist poetry, you know, Red Wheelbarrow or something like that. You could create images like that.
Well, poetry is all about imagery and things like that. So, Tyler, is that what you're working with, essentially, with artificial intelligence to teach them not only rhyme and meter, but also how to use imagery? Is that correct?
Well, what you're teaching them really is to sort of make patterns that are both creative and which also are based on some set of training data, some sort of English, for example, or a whole bunch of emoji. And you're basically saying, hey, learn these patterns and learn the patterns behind the patterns and the patterns behind the patterns behind the patterns and generate some stuff. So that's how those sort of programs work.
So if you're teaching an artificial intelligence device how to be poetic, there are all kinds of ways to be poetic. It's not just rhyme and meter. They have to understand, have to have a fundamental understanding of how we connect images in our head and what those images mean to us in different contexts. Is that the same with emojis?
We have this issue of translation here, where we're trying to figure out how to translate language between different platforms and devices and different media. It's one of the digital literacies that we need to consider.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back from the break, because I'm sure there's not a grammar yet for emojis, but there is a way to use them that has seemed to emerge almost organically. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Blumenthal Performing Arts, presenting Charlotte Squawks at Booth Playhouse June 2nd through the 26th. This musical parody takes aim at everything from pop culture and sports to traffic and politics. Nothing from the Queen City is off limits. Tickets at blumenthalarts.org. I wonder what that show is all about. Well, okay, on the Diane Rehm Show coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, the Transportation Security Administration is under fire for long, slow airport screening lines and allegations of mismanagement. The latest on airport security at home, the shakeup at the TSA, and the investigation into the Egypt Air crash. If you'd like to join our conversation about something much lighter, emojis and language, now's your shot. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at charlottetalks and use nothing but emojis to communicate. I'm just kidding.
This week on All Things Considered, Eddie Wong asks, how Chinese am I?
I've been pretty confused for a lot of my life.
The New York chef explores his identity through his food, but don't call it fusion.
I'm not into fusion. I'm not into a Subway teriyaki sub, right? It's not my thing.
And what's the thing with long lines at the TSA? Plus President Obama's trip to Asia. Listen to All Things Considered every afternoon.
Weekdays from 4 to 6:30, weekends at 5 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about emojis, in case you're just joining us. Those are pictorial symbols that appear on your cell phone or other devices that allow you to send pictures with text messages and tweets instead of just words. And we're talking about this with Tyler Snebelin, who is the founder and chief analyst of Itabon, who's done a lot of research into this. That's out in San Francisco. He joins us by phone. And in our studio, Dr. John MacArthur, associate professor of communications and the director of the graduate program at the Knight School of Communications at Queen's University of Charlotte, and Josephine Koster, professor of English and director of the English Graduate Studies Program at Winthrop University. How are these different, Tyler, from logos, which have permeated society in recent years through advertising? Logos have become very important, and it's pretty much the same thing, isn't it? Just a way to express, to immediately identify your company in a picture.
Well, one thing that's true about the Unicode Consortium is that all the time, as Joe was saying, they're adding new emoji, right? So every year there's basically a proposal process. And one of the things that they definitely are not adding is logos. If you're trying to get your brand pushed into an emoji, you will not see the Nike swoop in there in any time in the next several decades, at least. Just so that's clear, the logos don't get to become emoji. At least that's the current rules, and that those have been the rules so far. But how are emoji like logos? Well, we do use this visual communication as shorthand for different things, and you can do that for the representations of something like, Beyonce is sometimes known as Queen Bey. And so that means that you could use emoji for her, which is the sort of crown and then the bumblebee, right? So Queen Bey is one way of sort of representing her. And so people use these to sort of style themselves and style people and things and companies they care about. And it is part of this visual language, but it's not ever as explicit as perhaps a Burger King or a McDonald's logo, where you really are trying to say this is identical to this.
Although I must tell you,
you should have good feelings.
I have a French fry emoji on my phone, and I must tell you, it looks suspiciously like a big fries from McDonald's in a little red box. Very suspicious to me. Talk to me about grammar or syntax. Are there rules that have emerged? And if they're emerging, how are they emerging? There's no Academy Française trying to put rules out there for this. How is it happening?
Yeah, so part of what is going to happen is some of the rules are we speak and think in linear order, and the pictures then go in linear order. So if you're telling a story and you were going to be using emoji, you're going to have the first things that happen in time happen early in the emoji sequences, right? So that's just kind of a gimme, right? That's how we also do it. I'm going home and going to bed, right? Clearly that doesn't actually necessarily have to mean that you went to bed after you went home. All you said is "and," which could mean you could replace those. But really, obviously, we mean that in temporal ways, and we would mean the same thing in emoji. There's also the fact that if you want to sort of use these emoji, in many cases, they're pointing in certain directions. So if you're driving a car, if you're speeding away, well, the car points a particular direction. So if you wanted to drive home, you need to point the car emoji towards your house, which might mean house, car, depending on directionality. And then I think the more interesting thing here is that when people use these sequences, they tend to put their stance first. So they tend to put this face or something like that before they put, say, a broken heart, or before they put something like an okay symbol. So that tends to be the pattern that people are advising. They're giving you the key of, like, what's my facial expression, what's my intonation, and then what are my further symbols?
In different languages, we put adjectives in different places in the sentence. If I have a blue car in English, the adjective goes first. But if I have it in French, the adjective goes after. I have a car blue. Are these emoji syntactical rules based on English, or are they based on a compilation of rules from other languages?
I think most of them seem to be based on English. Sorry, Tyler. I think most of them seem to be based on English because it's left to right strings. I mean, for example, in Arabic, you write right to left.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see Arabic users using emojis, they tend to be left to right strings.
And how has it emerged that way? Because there's simply more English language users out there?
Or that just simply the conventions of the internet that those people learn to use the internet with.
So as you were talking, Tyler, about if you're going to go home, the party was a bummer, so I'm going home and going to bed. You could have a party hat. I don't know what you'd use for bummer. But then the next thing would be a car pointing towards your house and then a bed. Is that correct? I've stumped the band here. Are you there, Tyler? I think we've lost Tyler.
Yes, sorry, I was on mute. Sorry, my apologies.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Trying to be quiet when I was being quiet. Yeah, that sounds roughly right. But the truth is, of course, very few people end up using those sequences, and you do have some problems of directionality because cars may accidentally point you towards the party, and that's going to be a problem.
So that just seems to me to be very tiresome, very tedious, very time-consuming to do all of that. When you could just say, bad party, going home, going to bed.
Well, and there's...
Well, that's what most people do.
Then why are we having this conversation?
Well, but there are starting to be problems of interpretation that way. There was a case last year where a high school student put... apparently had a run-in with the security officer at his high school.
Mm-hmm.
And on his Facebook post, he put up the emoji of a policeman with a couple of guns pointing at him and was actually arrested for making a threat towards the police resource officer.
So the guns were pointing at the police.
Because the guns were pointing at the policeman. And that was his whole status, was like three guns pointing at the guy.
And how did they intercept that message?
I guess other students reported it. Just like, you know, if a student puts a message on his Facebook page, I'm going to shoot a cop, you know, somebody will report that. And the case was thrown out. Thrown out at the grand jury level, so it never went to court. But
well, that opens up another can of worms. It's open to interpretation because it's not language. So why are we confusing on a platform that is the cell phone platform that is designed for quick, easy, short communication? Why are we confusing the issue with pictures that can be misinterpreted?
One of the things I love about what Tyler's doing and others that are doing similar things is talking about emojis as punctuation. And I think that often we'll see emojis being used to punctuate a sentence. And, you know, language, these visual cues, nonverbal cues can punctuate, they can highlight, they can represent, they can take the place of words, but they can also be used to augment them, to enhance them, to add emotion to them. And I think that we're seeing more people use it in kind of a punctuational style. I read a study recently that if you are texting and you write a period at the end, that the receiver thinks that you're being terse. And I think that's fascinating. But if you write the same sentence and you put the kissy face emoji at the end, then they think maybe you're flirting with them. So it's a way to add that vocal quality.
So as linguists, we're changing the language. We're deciding that periods are too terse, so we're not going to use a period, although we've used periods forever. We're not going to use certain things. I mean, how do you feel about this as people who are involved in English?
Well, language changes all the time. Language never stops. If it stops, we call it a dead language, right? So this is part of the kind of generational change that all languages go through. It's happening at a very fast and forced pace right now. Normally, you know, when things happen, when it were happening with handwritten communication or even typed communication, people didn't see that instantaneously. You weren't publishing it to a million people over Twitter or something
right.
like that. But now that we're seeing it so quickly, then what we're seeing really is kind of the dominant users kind of establishing a pattern and people who are not dominant users following the pattern that's established. And that really is what happens in language change. It's just happening so fast.
And one of the things that's fascinating about digital communication in particular in terms of language is that we see a difference between the way that people use emojis and other forms of language between one sender and one receiver, say in a text message, and the ways that they might do it on Facebook if they were broadcasting out to a multiple audience. So I think one of the things to consider is that these pieces of communication, it matters who the sender is, but also who the receiver is. You wouldn't send a, you know, a smiley face probably to your boss and say, oh, I'm going to be late to work, smiley face. Or I'm sorry about what I did in the meeting, unicorn. So, I mean, that just wouldn't work. But you might do that with your friend that was in the meeting with you.
So we are doing with these emojis exactly what we do with language. We are using judgment. For the most part, not always, but for the most part.
Judgment and social convention, social practice.
What does a unicorn mean, by the way? I don't want to know. Maya on Twitter, kids' books have been using emojis for years. Every Dora book I've read to my son has had emojis for shoes, books, etc. Would we have thought of them as emojis before 1990, or would we just have just seen them as pictures in a book?
I think we would have seen them as pictures. I mean, driving up here today, I was looking at the road signs, and, you know, you see the gas pump and the fork and knife and the bed.
On a restroom door, you see a guy with pants or a woman with a skirt.
Well, we're in Charlotte. You could see both.
What you'd think.
I mean, we've been using pictographic communication. You know, that goes back to cuneiform. That goes back even before cuneiform.
So the pictographs are different from emojis, aren't they?
Well, emojis are pictographs. But they're just a special subset of them.
They are, and they're defined by the person who designed them. A pictograph can be anything, right? But an emoji is defined by this Unicode system that Tyler was mentioning earlier that says, if I send it on my phone, it'll at least resemble itself when it gets to yours.
And who is this body of this organization that admits new emojis into the language? Who are these people?
Tyler, you probably know that best.
Yeah, they're a bunch of technologists. Usually they're appointed by big companies like Google and Facebook and Microsoft to this body that governs sort of what should be in there. Unicode is actually much more impressive than maybe you think. It's in charge of basically making all human language of all time representable on digital devices. So that means that they have Samaritan, as in ancient, like the Good Samaritan. Those symbols are available in Unicode. All the different languages that are still written in the world today, those are also available because of Unicode. And so they have this very giant purview, and including, you know, like symbols used once in a manuscript by Isaac Newton, so also historically significant symbols. They put them all so that people can represent them digitally and they'll be consistent. So this body is built up of technologists to sort of have an interest in making sure that the platforms all stay fairly consistent with each other with what and how they represent.
So there is, though, however, this elasticity in meaning in these emojis, and I read yesterday that that's part of its appeal to some people. Why? Because if there is an elasticity to interpretation, then you risk being misunderstood.
There's always elasticity to language. I mean, if you write an email to someone, it can come across in some very different ways depending on how the person reads the email. And since most of us aren't the most talented at expressing ourselves with clarity and conciseness and felicity of expression, then we are bound by the receiver's interpretation in anything that we communicate.
Tyler?
Imagine that from now on, for this week, everything that you said and wrote was going to be absolutely crystal clear about what you meant. That would be a problem. We get a lot of advantages out of having language, normal language, be ambiguous. And that's just a feature of all language. And so sometimes, yes, emoji make a meaning sort of less clear. They muddy it up, and that can be useful. And sometimes they make it more clear, just as stress and a raised eyebrow
yes.
and make your focus more clear.
Sometimes you respond to emails and you are purposefully vague because you don't want to say, or it would be impolite or impolitic to say what you're really thinking. So you're purposefully vague. So that's an example of this. You want the elasticity so it can be interpreted. If it's misinterpreted, you could say, that's not what I meant. And so that gives you an out.
plausible deniability.
Yeah.
Well, think of the southern adverb directly. You know, will you do this? Oh, I'll do it directly. It means somewhere between now and the next time Sherman comes through Atlanta.
Or bless your heart, which does not mean bless your
heart.
In the course of our spoken face-to-face communication, we use hand symbols. We use hand signals all the time. We use our hands. We say okay. We use hand clapping in a theater to indicate we're appreciative of what's going on. Could all these be physical emojis, just an extension of what we're moving into now in the pictorial world?
You know, our nonverbal communication has been studied all across the board. So we have proxemics, which is the study of space, chronemics, which is how we use time, the rate of our speech, paralanguage, which is our tone, our verbal inflection, our pitch, our volume. Silence is a nonverbal expression, our choice not to communicate something. All of these things communicate. And so when we're So I wouldn't call them all emojis. I would say emoji is another form of nonverbal communication. It's digital, and it's one that we can start to study as we have studied nonverbal communication throughout.
It's another tool in the toolbox, Absolutely. Essentially. James on Twitter writes, Chinese has been written in pictures for thousands of years. Mike on Facebook, the visual revolution is upon us. Emojis have a great history in something called isotype, as well as Olympic symbols. The symbols or the systems are part of the legacy of emojis and have the potential to be a great unifier across cultures. That's one of the things I was going to ask about. Is this a way to facilitate universal communication? Because if I'm sending a text to you and you're not terribly well-versed in English, if I put emojis in it, pictures are pictures. A house is a house.
Absolutely. And if you watch the emoji tracker online and you click on one of those emojis, you'll see that the texts, the person may be tweeting in Korean or they may be tweeting in Arabic or in English, but it's the same string of emojis at the end. So there is a very strong cross-cultural ability for these, you know, about 800 symbols that people can unify around.
So I read yesterday that the next wave or the new thing is not texting at all, but using your text app to record a short message, and when you receive it, you play it back. It's kind of like a phone call or a message on your phone machine.
I've been trying to get away from my answering machine for years.
Is that the next wave? Rather than typing it out and using an emoji, just hit the record button and send it, and they can hear your voice.
We've got to get you on Snapchat, Mike. It would be wonderful to have you with dog ears. Looking at something.
And with that, we will end this conversation. John MacArthur is Associate Professor of Communications and the Director of Graduate Programs at the Knight School of Communications at Queen's University of Charlotte, where they're very proud of him. Josephine Koster is Professor of English and Director of English Graduate Studies at Winthrop University, and Tyler Sneblin is the Founder and Chief Analyst of Itabon. Thank you all for the hour. Smiley face.